So I think a highest yoga tantra regards the vas breathing or power breathing as a principal factor in what makes highest yoga tantra in general a fast path to enlightenment. It's got to do with the intensified energy levels and sort of purified or clarified lung or prana that is generated by means of vas breathing. And once you do vas breathing, you very quickly notice the transformations that it brings. A lot of people within a week or 2 weeks or a month of doing the practice notice quite radical changes in their health and their well-being. One of my students in Korea, he was always had problems with his heating part of his body, heating element. And as a result, he suffered a lot from like he would have to take like 4 or 5 showers a day just on kind of the body odor that would come from in improper burning of the energies, improper digestive system, so each cell would kind of, you know, release or excrete unfinished nutrient. And of course, that's always difficult in one's life if you have to take 4 or 5 showers every day just over that element. It's a lot of time, a lot of energy, and sometimes you can't do it, and then it's kind of a... But within a month of doing the vas breathing, his whole body transformed and became like a normal, strong, healthy person. He's a very high energy guy in general. Generally only sleeps 4 or 5 hours a night and is full intensity for the rest of the day. But by doing the vas breathing, his whole physical metabolism just readjusted itself and became like a fine working machine. The main thing with the breathing exercise is one breathes in deeply through the nose and as pulls the energy to the base of the spine and presses down with the abdomen, pulls up with the muscles of the pelvic floor. It's called vas breathing because in India the vas was shaped like a long neck and the belly of the vase is like this thing like this. And then you've got the flat bit. So when you sit like this with your legs crossed, that's like the bottom of a vase. And when you breathe in and push the air down, it's like the belly of the vase. It gets its name from that. So you breathe in and press down. Oh, and the vase, the Indian vase, also has kind of a lip on the top, so you can pick it up like this kind of thing from its lip. It's kind of rips on. So our shoulders are a bit like the lip on a Indian vase. I think they're thinking, you know, just like that, like a human sitting in meditation looks a little bit like an Indian vase. Or as you say in America, vase, the vase breathing. Pulling up on the muscles of the pelvic floor just means making the whole energy system a kind of a ball from up from a down from a, and pressing into the navel chakra. And why is that done? Because in the beginning it said the upward rising energy and the downward emptying energy, these two energies are the two very coarse and most dominant energies of the body, the first two to be controlled in tantric yoga. So by pressing down, you're using the downward moving energy. By pulling up, you're using the other energy. You bring them both together. So they kind of lock into one another and bring one another into a kind of a fixed stance. In the beginning, of course, this is just used to balance the energies in the navel chakra, which means the 3 or 4 lower chakras, often referred to as the sexual chakras. Because if we talk of the 4 chakras from the upper side, the navel, heart, throat, and head, if we talk about 4 lower chakras, the navel becomes the upper, and then the secret chakra, in other words, the mula chakra, the middle of the pelvic floor, becomes like the throat chakra. And the other two on the male are the top half of the penis and the tip of the penis. And on the woman, it's like the clitoris and the G-spot. So sometimes, rather than work with the four upper chakras, for people who suffer a lot from depression, they work with the four lower chakras. And why do they do that? Because sexual energy is basically a happy energy. You don't feel like romantic and sexy and at the same time feel unhappy. In fact, if you feel unhappy, you're kind of unsexy, aren't you? They're kind of opposite to one another. So by pressing the energies into the navel chakra, it's basically stimulating simultaneously these four lower chakras, or the four sexual chakras, and balancing the male and female energies in them, and giving rise to a feeling of physical pleasure, physical well-being, a stronger sexual energy, which is always a life reinforcing quality. And then when we look later at some of the Trulkor, the exercises we do together with them, and we'll see ways in which when we hold the energy at the navel chakra, how those physical exercises basically massage improve the health of basically everything from our male and female chemical producers, the ovaries and the testes and so on, as well as things like adrenal glands and spleen and liver and all of the kind of solar plexus area organs. If we do this Vaz breathing, we breathe in, press down and pull up, bring it to the place at the navel chakra and hold it for 30 to 45 seconds, then relax the muscles and breathe out slowly through the nose. So unlike the other breathing exercises, the lung selwa, and unlike the breath purification, here we do hold the breath and we hold it for a reasonable amount of time. What? No colors. Colorless, flavorless, and tasteless. Tasteful without a taste. And the emphasis here is pressing down gently with the muscles of the abdomen and pulling up gently with the muscles of the pelvic floor, so as making a kind of a one's belly into a ball and pressing it into the navel chakra area.
Abdominal breathing, where you actually let the belly come out?
Yes, yeah. Sometimes it said swallow before you press down, if you want to know how the abdomen moves, because when you swallow, the abdomen naturally moves into that shape. Yeah.
No, it's on.
It's on.
All right. I know that, you know, the spiritual path in general will eventually, the Kundalini comes up and burns the webs between chakras, is my understanding of it. And by forcing that to happen, if a person's not ready for that to happen, mm-hmm. where the Kundalini is that active, mm-hmm. will they just not be able to do it? Or is it, you know, can it be at all dangerous to, it's kind of like the little will deciding that that's mm-hmm. a good thing to do rather than
spiritual I've path. Never met anyone in the Buddhist world who has had negative results from the Chandali training or Tummo or Kundalini training. I often heard stories of people in the Hindu tradition having negative side effects. I'm not sure why that is, because I'm not that directly involved in them, but just very recently I was asked if I would consult with, when I was in Brooklyn, with someone who had spent time in an Indian ashram and the Kundalini experience had had negative side effects for them. But this never happened in my experience ever of 35 or 40 years with Buddhism. I've never once seen even one negative side effect. But doesn't mean there haven't been any. Just in my limited experience with tens of thousands of people, I've never encountered it. I think it's a little bit to do with the blessing of the lineage. You know, one problem with some of the Hindu trainings is, you know, India was under Muslim rule for almost 800 years. And so a lot of the lineages were fragmented and weren't kept very strong or very clear. And so the practices weren't kept as alive and as strong as they were. Whereas in the Tibetan tradition, they retained total purity of lineage until the Chinese invasion of the 1950s, which is not so long ago. Whereas India, basically, they fell under Muslim rule about 1100 to 1200, so 800 years of basically a kind of a free-for-all in the Indian world. You know, there wasn't really a central organizing committee. Like every Tibetan school, everyone knows who is and who isn't a qualified teacher. There's no secret about it. Whereas in India, there's nothing like that. You just have people wandering around gathering lineages, and then they settle down and they open a school, and if they're charismatic, it becomes a big school. So I think that's a problem in the Hindu tradition, in the Indian tradition. A little bit like with Christians in the West, we've got a lot of very strong, positive Christians, but then you've got sort of the free-for-all element, and you get wackos like Jim Jones setting up in South America under the name of Christianity. And so whenever you've got that kind of free-for-all with no real commitment to lineage and no authorizing body, I think you run into those kind of problems. So our generation may be the last generation that sees a really authentic Tibetan world like that, Tibetan lineage world, because obviously as refugees it becomes much more diffused, and sort of there's no real kind of necessity yet. You know, the way lineages were traditionally endorsed and authenticated it becomes weaker in a refugee situation, obviously. But until now, I haven't experienced anyone having negative side effects from the Tibetan lineages of Chandali Yoga or Kundalini Yoga. And I have encountered quite a few with Indians, and I think it has to do with the fragmentation of lineages and the lack of authentication of lineage teachers. As I say, I think it's much more dangerous to keep a pet in your house than it is to practice Tibetan Chandali or Kundalini Yoga.
Can you discuss the relationship between Kundalini Tummo, the Kundalini rising, the chakras opening, the whole system working, and enlightenment, as it's called? and how much enlightenment depends upon the physical part of the Kundalini circulating and opening and that practice. And can you completely achieve enlightenment solely by doing something like, such as the six yogas of Naropa and concentrating on the vase breathing, etc.?
That's like a really long question with a whole bunch of little questions in it. I mean, the idea in Tantra is that the reason why Tantra is a fast vehicle for enlightenment when one is prepared to practice it is because Tummo rebalances the Vajra body. In other words, it creates an inner environment which is much more conducive to meditation and spiritual experience. One's body works perfectly with the mind rather than working against the mind. As we see in tantras like Guhya Samaja Tantra, with the five chakras, when any of the five chakras are out of sync, that whole emotional part of one's emotional body goes out of sync. So that's like trying to run a marathon race with a bad leg or a super limp or a broken toe or something like that. You might be able to complete it, but it's going to be slow and painful, and you're not going to come in first. So the theory of Tantra, the principle on which Tantra is based, I should say, rather than theory, the principle is that when one creates an inner body which is finely tuned to a spiritual endeavor, then, as it's often said in the text, one day of meditation becomes like 100 years in an untuned body. It's like trying to play a Beethoven symphony on a guitar, on a piano, which is out of tune. It's not going to come out very, very beautifully or successfully. Whereas if one tunes the piano, it comes out successfully. So in many ways, Tummo, in its elementary stages at least, is tuning the piano of one's body to create the symphony of enlightenment. The idea is something like that. Therefore, it's often said, if you can do that well, one day becomes like 100 years of doing it without. It's like if you're driving a jet plane, in one day you can fly what you can walk in 100 days or something like that, or maybe more. As for so-called enlightenment experience, what is enlightenment? It's really a transformation of the being, the person, into a state of body-mind in which the body-mind totally reflects the inherent harmony and being, well-being, or harmony and perfection of the universe. So, as Nagarjuna puts it, the mind is like a mirror. When the mirror is perfectly clear, the whole universe is reflected in it. When the mind is clear, the whole universe is reflected in the mind. Or in another place, he says, like after a rain and there's water left in a horse's footprint, if that mud settles, the water in the horse's footprint reflects the entire universe. So the main problem is if the footprint of the horse still is all muddy and murky and dirty and whatnot, it doesn't reflect well. So in many ways, you could say, Chandali Yoga or Tummo is a way of making that water in the horse's footprint able to perfectly reflect the universe. And that reflecting the universe, of course, means here giving rise to the wisdom which appreciates the emptiness and the appearing nature simultaneously, those two aspects of things. In other words, the two wisdoms arise simultaneously.
Is there a rule or a guideline as to how long you hold the breath?
It's said that, like, to basic competence is, you know, Tibetans didn't have, and Indians in old days didn't have watches, so you couldn't talk about minutes and seconds. So they counted by going like this. So you want to get up to about 36 of those. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, 4 Mississippi, 5 Mississippi, 6 Mississippi. So you want to be able to hold your breath. The minimum is 36 Mississippis. That means about 35 to 45 seconds. You know, you can do it a little faster if you like. But it was meant to be a kind of doing this at a kind of a casual rate. So the beginning practitioner aims to be to call yourself a beginning practitioner, as each breath should be held for 36 of those rotations, which means about 35 to 45 seconds, perhaps. It's difficult when you first do it to do more than 3 or 7 breaths at a time at that pace without feeling you're getting a little low on oxygen. A lot of beginners, they'll do 3 or 7 breaths like that, and then they'll just relax and breathe deeply. Then they'll do another 3 or 7, then relax and breathe deeply. Another 3 or 7, relax and breathe deeply. The Tibetan manuals stress that it's important not to force when you press, so press down and pull up in a kind of a gentle way. So it shouldn't be like, you know, you're super constipated or something like that, or like having a baby or something like that. It should be done in a firm yet relaxed manner, the pressing down and pulling up. But to get into the dream yoga a little bit before we run out of time, essentially, and Michelle earlier asked about the Kala Chakra Tantra, in my belief, the dream yoga principles of the 6 yogas really is informed by the language of the Kala Chakra Tantra. And in the language of the Kala Chakra Tantra, when the energies are mostly in the crown chakra, in other words, in the brain, we're wide awake. When they move to the throat chakra, in sleep, we're in a dreamy state. Or if we're awake, we're in a daydreaming state. Heart chakra is deep sleep and deep relaxation. And navel chakra is in a blissful or a sort of sexual excitation mode. And so when we practice dream yoga, we essentially try to monitor our sleep and dream and notice, are we sleeping too light or too deep? Are we awake in our dreams or remembering our dreams? Or are our dreams so intense that we don't get good rest, and so on? So in the sleep dream yoga, everyone keeps a, practitioners should keep a dream journal and learn to cultivate appreciation of dreams. You know, I sometimes stress that in some Tibetan texts go so far to say that when you're awake, it's not a terribly useful time for meditation. You're really just wandering around gathering food and resources so that when you go to sleep, you can get the real spiritual work done. The idea is their dream state is much more, you're much more malleable, transformable in the dream state, because this conceptual mind is much less active in the dream state. In the waking state, we kind of live in a plastic, man-made world. It's not much to do with reality. You know, we go to work at a particular time. That's not really natural. It's just because it's a social convention. We see particular people. That's not really natural. It's just our job takes us that way. We watch particular kind of TV programs and whatnot. It's not really natural. It's just a man-made thing we do. So when we're awake, we live in this kind of synthetic world created by human culture where we don't really experience much to do with reality. We mostly experience a kind of a human creation, like playing a video game rather than living real life, so to speak. Whereas when we go to sleep, there's just ourself and our dreams. There's nothing else there. So that's, in a way, a much more authentic state of being than is waking consciousness. That's much more real than waking consciousness. that's much more universal than waking consciousness. So all the tantric traditions put this very strong emphasis on cultivating awareness of sleep, appreciation for sleep, and doing something when we're asleep. In Tibetan, it's known as Milam Naljor, which means dream yoga. But the word, Tibetan word Naljor has the sense of authentic, being authentic. Nalwa means something true or honest, and Jorwa means linking to that or touching that. So touching to the authentic, touching to the true. And in our waking state, we don't so much. Like in a restaurant, the foods there are just things people put there, and the music being played is just things being played. There's not much to do with us other than in a very sort of synthetically created way. What's going on in dream yoga is that essentially when we go to sleep, we want to be able to be awake in our sleep, be aware in our sleep, as intensely aware as we are in a very important moment of wakefulness. Our sleep should be awake as much as our being awake is awake. For that reason, the first stage in dream yoga is called Milam Zimpa, which has this often translates as Zimpa means to hold or to retain, but it really means to know or to understand. So the first stage is to learn to be aware that you're dreaming when you're dreaming. Like when you're awake, usually you're aware that you're awake. But often when you're asleep, you're not aware that you're sleeping. So the first stage is really pressing that point. So how do we do that? We keep a dream journal and we try to notice what our sleep pattern is like and to adjust it accordingly. Therefore, sleep and dream yoga could just as easily be called sleep management or sleep and dream management. It's really learning to sleep with the maximum kind of relaxation and at the same time the maximum spiritual awareness or spiritual presence. Dream yoga is tied to the second of the six yogas, the illusory body yoga. So if we divide the illusory body yoga, it's divided into three basic aspects. Illusory body yoga, the way we practice when we're awake, the illusory body yoga, the way we practice when we're asleep, and the illusory body yoga, the way we practice when we're dead. And when we're awake, we practice in two ways. One is on the meditation cushion, and what the other is between meditation sessions, between cushion sessions. What happens on the meditation cushion? We practice Tummo. And when we practice Tummo on a slightly more advanced level, when we do the practice, the energies dissolve, earth into water, water into fire, fire into air into space, space into mind, mind into the three dimensions of mind and into the fourth dimension of mind, which is clear light consciousness. So we try to cultivate those experiences when we're awake on our meditation cushion. In other words, develop our Tummo to the level that we have a sense of the transformation of the Course elemental energies. And then when we go to sleep at night, we notice how much the same thing happens. The first earth element dissolves into water, water into fire, fire into air. Earth into water, we lose the ability to move our limbs, and water, earth and water into fire, our blood, our heartbeat drops and becomes slower. Water into air, our breathing becomes more shallow. No, water into fire, our body temperature drops. Sorry. fire into air, our breathing becomes more shallow, and we take that deep breath. We basically exhale, and we go into a very deep state of sleep. So when that happens, basically then on the inside of the mind, the qualities of consciousness begin to transform and begin to change. It said first the male energies dissolve, and the conceptual mindsets which support the consciousness of anger and alienation and fear, these male qualities fail. So that conceptual mindset just stops working. We get the flash of moonlight-like white. And then the female energies dissolve, supporting the conceptual mindsets of attachment and longing and craving and so forth. And the flash of the red sunset-like. Then the mindsets which support the sense of independent self dissolve, and we swoon into a kind of unconsciousness. And then the clear light, the timeless clear light, arises. And that clear light is the same as the clear light of the moment of enlightenment and the clear light of the moment of death. Except we don't have the ability to retain it very much when we're falling asleep. It just arises and then we're asleep. So during the day on our meditation cushion, we try to develop the ability to retain it so that when we go to sleep at night, we notice those same transformations. And when the clear light of moment of sleep arises, we can retain it for some time and just rest in it. And when we come out of the clear light of the moment of sleep, we're in the dream state. So if we can retain the awareness, the clear light of the moment of sleep, then when we come into the dream state, we have some sort of conscious presence. Rather than just dreaming but not knowing we're dreaming, we come out of it into the dream knowing that we're dreaming. So the basis of dream yoga is like that. So we said during the day on our meditation cushions, and sometimes it's linked to the sexual yogas, because when we make love, those elements transform in much of the same way as we move toward the orgasmic state. The earth element becomes weaker and our body becomes more like this, sort of rigid. And then the other elements similarly transform as we move toward the orgasmic state. And as we move towards the orgasmic state, the conceptual mind comes to a halt, just as at, like at the moment of going to sleep and like at the moment of death. I was watching a video on YouTube, one of the science videos, and one was called The Science of Orgasm. It was talking about how at the moment of orgasm, 99.9% of the brain shuts down. In other words, we're almost brain dead at the moment of orgasm. And for that reason, that experience is something very special. It's very timeless. It's beyond ordinary being human or being an elephant or being a cockroach or being a mouse or being anything. It's kind of a universal state of consciousness. So to go back to how I initiated the discussion, we have to develop this kind of dream journal, watch our sleep, and then see what's actually going on in our sleep state, in our dream state, and cultivate the habit of being awake in our sleep, cultivate the habit of being aware of our sleep patterns, and develop the power to have some kind of control over that. And which is why I like the expressions sleep and dream management rather than sleep and dream yoga. Many people say they don't dream at all, but brain scans show that this isn't at all the case. It's just that they have zero personal awareness during it, or retention awareness during it. So depending on what goes on in our dream journal, we have to manipulate the chakra work accordingly. If we're not aware of our dreams, the first thing we have to do is make our dreams more visible, if you will, more noticeable. And for that reason, the dream yoga training starts with working with the throat chakra, which is associated with dreams. Both the six yogas of Naropa and the Niguma system give quite a few suggestions for what we can do. And one is that we put a very small lotus flower on a red chakra in the throat, and a red letter Ah or a red letter Om. We can do either. When we do Tuma, we have Ha, Om, Hum, Ah, right? So it can just be the letter Om, which we use normally in the Tuma practice. Otherwise, it's also possible just to use a little Ah, like we had used in the navel, because Ah is really the basis of Om. Om is just Ah with the letter O added to it. In other words, with a Naro on top of it. Otherwise, we can just use the big letter Ah. Om is the big letter Ah with a Naro on top of it. And Ah meaning increasing our female quality, our wisdom quality as we go to sleep, our wisdom awareness quality. Often this is done by beginners in a kind of a ritualistic way. You visualize your guru, your teacher, your main lama in front of you, in the space in front of you. And you can have a prayer to the lineage gurus. You can say, oh, you know, Glenn the Great. His gurus were blah, blah, the great. His gurus were blah, blah, the great. His gurus, blah, blah, the great. All the way back to the Buddha. And in my case, my guru for the six yogas and whatnot, my first transmission guru, was Kabji Trijon Dorji Chang. So I think Trijon Dorji Chang and his teacher and his teacher and his teacher. So then you sort of read the names back to the time of the Buddha of people who have practiced this yoga successfully. And you think, if that bunch of dummies can do it, I can certainly do it. There's no question. I mean, that's the salient feature of Buddhist training, is that if one person can do it, another person can do it. And so, if I die before I'm as great as, say, Trijon Rinpoche or Dalai Lama or Ling Rinpoche or Dilgo Khyentse or Kala Rinpoche or any of my Sakya Thisen. Well, a few female as well, but I won't mention.
Never hear anything about them,
I won't mention them in front of Stephanie, or she'll like pack her bags and fly to India, and we won't see her again. She'll be up in the mountains with them. But anyway, if I die before becoming equal to them, either they failed or I failed. You know, their job isn't to like sit on thrones and talk, and me sit on the floor and listen. The job of the teacher is to teach, and the job of the student is to become as great as the teacher, equal to the teacher. And from the time of the Buddha, that's been the nature of Buddhism, the Enlightenment tradition. So we make a prayer to our teacher and his, the one before, the one before, the one before, the one before. And request for inspiration and blessings or whatever, if you will, in the practice. And based on that inspiration and those blessings, that'll give us a little bit of a push or a little bit of a kick start. And then we turn to the navel chakra, the throat chakra, and we put the Ah, red Ah. Some versions of the Hey Vajra Tantra, have us put 5 letters. So a four petal lotus, Om at the center, and Anuttara, 1 syllable on each of the 4 petals. And we basically put the mind on the Om, and we go Anuttara, Anuttara, Anuttara. So we sort of do a circumambulation around our own throat chakra, so to speak. Because it's female tantra, we perhaps should do it counterclockwise. But I'm not sure that's so important, and I haven't seen that specified. But usually in female tantra, one does counterclockwise. And so anyway, by stimulating the chakra in that way, one tries to get the, I presume it's thyroidic chemistry into the blood system. And as one goes to sleep, one essentially brings the energies to the throat chakra. Now, when we normally go to sleep, for deep sleep, we go to the heart chakra, we dissolve, and in meditation, that head down and feet up into the hung at the heart, and so on and so forth, we dissolve into the heart chakra. That's generally the best way in Tantra, the most common way in Tantra to do the dissolution at the time of clear light Dharmakaya, at the time of sleep, and at the time of death. But here we do it into the throat chakra, not into the heart chakra. And sometimes when we lay down and we put our head down on the pillow, we imagine that the pillow is Vajrayogini, one of the great Dakinis, and we're putting our head down in the lap of Vajrayogini. And that sort of increases the wisdom, the wisdom energies, or the female energies. And then as we dissolve into the throat chakra, energies into the throat chakra and the sense of self and world into the throat chakra, and slowly go off to sleep, we have the idea, we try to cultivate awareness as the earth element withdraws in the body, the arms become heavy, that this is where we are. So we try to follow the dissolution process in a very real way as it's happening. And of course, depending on how mature you are as a practitioner, you can go to a deeper level of consciousness before your consciousness gets too thin to support your own level of awareness. In other words, some people can only be self-aware on the basis of the conceptual mind, so that more and more subtle consciousness gets, the more difficult it is to be self-aware. But the more one can stay self-aware during that process of energy dissolution, then the more chance one has of succeeding in dream yoga. The idea is something like that. So when I was recently doing a television interview with the fellow who wrote the book for Namka Norbu on dream yoga, and another guy in England who's written one with the Ayang Toku over in England on dream yoga. One of them commented that the mindfulness is one of the key factors. Mindfulness in the sense of, in Buddhism, mindfulness really means self-awareness, the ability to keep the mind aware of the processes that it's experiencing. What's the opposite of mindfulness? A thought comes up and we lose awareness of process and we just get lost in that thought and float away on that thought. So I think for tonight, for the dream yoga, a good thing is when people go to sleep, if you set an alarm, there's alarm clocks in people's rooms and you get up at like 5 or 5:30 or for a half hour, do Tummo, and then do the practice of the letter Om and the Anuttara on the throat chakra. Develop a strong sense you're going to go back to sleep and a strong resolution to stay awake in your dream. and to have an auspicious, to have a significant dream that you will be awakened and to remember. So I think we'll just make a very simple practice like that.
Okay, I am really into dreams, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Tibetan instructions miss a few points, mm-hmm. such as, I think that to be a great dreamer and do things in your dreams, you have to be very authentic when you're awake. You have to be courageous. You have to have, you know, as you said, a lack of fear of emotions also. You have to be somewhat passionate. You have to have a certain aspect of impeccability and
Doris,
spontaneity.
Please write these things
and
down.
And trustworthiness. No, I mean it.
I meant it to Doris, to please write them down.
I wrote them.
What?
I haven't written them. I'm not either.
Had you finished the list, or did I
probably
interrupt?
But what I mean is, you know, all these layered instructions mm-hmm. are somewhat antithetical to the actual dream state. Mm-hmm. And I think spontaneity is a big part of the dream state, and also having a really good, or I don't even know what word to use, but a real connection with your subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, and it's very true if you look at what Tibetan dream yoga is doing, say, compared to what Jungian dream analysis is doing. It's a very different kettle of fish. So, for instance, I've done a lot of dream yoga workshops with Jungian groups around the world. Now, for them, they don't like to have any control of the dream state. But that's not what we're doing in Tantra. It's a different tradition. And so, you know, the main thing with tradition, practicing a particular tradition, is seeing what the tradition is doing with that.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that you should do that. You can be a Jungian dream therapist, or you can be a free spirit, authentic, courageous, fearless dreamer. But it's very different than trying to learn what a tradition is teaching for a particular practice.
Right. But what brings the results?
Yeah, correct. The result is you achieve enlightenment.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the point of it, is enlightenment.
No, I know, but everything is relevant that brings the result.
Everything that brings enlightenment is relevant, that's true, yeah. And there's not only one way to enlightenment, and there's not only dream yoga, Tibetan dream yoga, or Indo-Tibetan dream yoga, or tantric dream yoga for enlightenment. For instance, Jungian dream analysts keep dream journals and discuss the meanings of these, and they don't like to control the energies at all when they dream. But the purpose is a little bit different.
Okay, so what is the purpose of the way, of the system that you're describing?
Mm-hmm.
What is the purpose?
It's got a number of purposes. The first purpose is when you're aware in the dreams of how things work in a dream, how your mind interprets experiences in a dream, then you become very aware of how the subject-object dichotomy and the waking state influences your experience. For instance, if you look at a dream dog, like Susie was mentioning over dinner, but having a dream where you're trying to run from something and the world turns into glue and you can't move fast enough, that becomes a very fearful experience. Now, if you study the mind in that situation and the relationship between subject in that situation, it transforms your emotional response to the situation. So the point is, then, if you can do that in dreams, in the waking state, you also notice that the way the mind relates to objects in a waking state is very similar to the way that it relates to it in a dream state. In a dream state, it's more clear that mind and the object of mind are one and the same entity. It's not so clear or obvious in the waking state.
Is there any value to using a deity or invocation to try to help elicit the lucidity? mm-hmm. in a dream, going to bed with the intention of getting help.
Right. Well, you know, in the tradition, usually you would do your sadhana, your tantric sadhana first. So you would do either Vajrayogini or Chakrasambhara or He Vajra. So you would become the deity before you go to sleep. You wouldn't go to sleep in your ordinary state. So first you would do your sadhana, and at the end of the sadhana you dissolve into clear light dharmakaya, come out of the clear light dharmakaya as a simple form of the deity, or rather the more complicated mandala form. And as you go to sleep, you see your body as that body of light in the deity form.
Did you say that there was a simple deity practice that you're supposed to elicit versus the more complicated?
Right. After sadhana, usually you come out of the sadhana in a very simple form of the deity. So often in sadhana, multiple heads and arms and all the symbolizing various wisdoms and various applications and yogas and so forth. But you come out as a simple form, two arm, one head, meaning like that. And in this case, probably as a dakini, as a vajrayogini.
Does it need to be a wrathful yidam?
No. But you know, because the six yogas of Naropa, it should be connected either with Chakrasambhara Tantra or with He Vajra Tantra.
Is there any benefit to willing or going to bed with the intention of a movement in the dream to assist with a different self perception? Some people fly in their dreams, have mm-hmm. different types of movement mm-hmm. that you obviously mm-hmm. can't do in a waking state. Is any of that beneficial?
You know, in the dream yoga manuals for beginners and people like just trying to do something tonight, the main thing is the resolution or the strong determination to dream and be aware or awake in your dream. That's the most important. When we become able to stay awake in our dream or to lucidly dream very freely, then the training undergoes various levels of applications. And the first really big one is curing what's known as the elemental phobias. Fear of earth and being crushed, fear of water and being drowned, fear of fire and being burned, fear of air and being blown away or carried away in hurricanes and tornadoes and the such. And so one presses oneself to dream things, dream events that will cure those four elemental phobias. So being crushed by great boulders, have mountains falling on you, or being carried away by great floods to cure the phobia of water. Falling or being hit by a great firestorm or caught in great forest fires to overcome phobia of fire. And then phobias of wild animals, tigers and so on. And I noticed most North Americans are ladies are scared of bugs, so the bug phobia. Fear of snakes, yes, snakes phobias. So what, trying to go through one's life of things of which one is afraid and willing dreams to cure oneself of those phobias. It's said that, you know, in the dream state one becomes naturally slightly clairvoyant. That you know, people very easily dream of things which are have a clairvoyant nature or an extra perceptual power. So, of the five ways to develop clairvoyance, meditation is the most stable, but also a little bit difficult. Not everyone can do it, but everyone becomes naturally clairvoyant in dreams. So, dream yoga. The dream state and lucid dreaming becomes a way to cultivate the clairvoyant aspects of mind. It's also a useful environment for exploring past life regression. And one doesn't do that just to talk about, I was this in my past life or that in my past life, not for really for bragging rights, but rather to understand why one is, how one is, and why one behaves, how one behaves, and the nature of one's relationships with others. The great Joe Palanatisha, who wrote Tibet's first Lam Rim text, said in it that if one can become clairvoyant, that every day becomes like 100 years of merit. You're able to benefit beings in such, your life is so much more beneficial in every way because you understand things on such a more profound level. So in one of the early verses of his Lam Dun, his lamp on the path to enlightenment, he said, anyone who is practicing Mahayana should aim to become clairvoyant as quickly as possible, to develop the 5 clairvoyances, because it helps one understand oneself one much better and others much better. But dream yoga is considered to be, after meditation, the next most stable way of becoming clairvoyant. So let's, just back to the dream yoga, the way what we want to try to do tonight. So if people wake, if they wake up a little bit early. When I learned dream yoga in Dharamsala, our teacher had us go to bed at about 11 or 10 and get up at 3 and stay up till about 5 and then go to sleep and meditate until sunrise, or sleep until sunrise. Get up at meditate until dawn, go back to sleep at dawn and meditate until, sleep until sunrise. So we go to bed at 10:30 or 11, get up at 3, do our sadhana and tummo practice and so forth until dawn. Go back to sleep at dawn and see, watch our dreams and keep our dream journal only from between dawn and sunrise. No other time of the night was considered worth monitoring as beginners. So we can give that a try tonight. So I think let's conclude by doing the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra for a little bit. And that's everyone's, all Central Asia's favorite mantra, not only Asia, but also throughout China, Korea, even Japan. And as we do it, just to give a sense of our body is radiant and at our heart chakra, a white lotus, and on the white lotus, the letter Hri, surrounded by the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. Mani, our male energy, aggression transformed into universal compassion. And Padme, the lotus, admiration and attraction transformed into universal wisdom. And so we send compassion and wisdom as we do the mantra, send the compassion and wisdom through our body. So every cell of our body becomes wise and compassionate and sends out through our pores and fill the universe. So all beings in the universe become wise and compassionate, or are touched by wisdom and compassion. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane bamo. Amane bamo hung om, 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 amane bamo hung om. Amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om. Amane bamo hung om, 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 amane bamo hung om. Amane bamo hung om, 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 amane bamo. Amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane bamo hung om, amane. Amane bamo hung ri. Omane bama hung, omane bama hung, omane bama hung, ri. Gawandi nyurda da, shenra ze wantrum gyurne, trova chi kyum malo pa, te asala kuparsho. Janjo samcho rinpoche ma kepana, kekir chi kepan yambame pa yon kone kondu, pa warsho.